I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Dr. Terry Walls, is a clinical professor of medicine at the University of Iowa. She is the author of Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive Multiple Sclerosis Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine, and the cookbook, The Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life, The Revolutionary Modern Paleo Plan to Treat All Chronic Autoimmune Conditions. You can learn more about her work from her website, terrywalls.com. She hosts the Walls Protocol Seminar every August, where anyone can learn how to implement the protocol with ease and success. Follow her on Facebook, Terry Walls MD, and on Twitter at Terry Walls. Learn more about her multiple sclerosis clinical trials by reaching out to her team via this email at msdietstudy@healthcare.uiowa.edu. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Walls, and I look forward to hearing about your journey with multiple sclerosis. Now, first, can you tell us your story?
Sure. So I'm an academic internal medicine doc. My area of expertise is internal medicine. In 2000, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis on the basis of a history of visual dimming 13 years earlier and a new problem with weakness in my left leg. I had undergone several weeks of testing, referral to neurology, then referral to the Cleveland Clinic, where they confirmed the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that time, I took the newest drug, saw their best people, and I was really a conventional internal medicine doc.
Mm-hmm.
I had thought complementary alternative medicine, supplements, diets were a waste of money. I wanted the newest drugs and the latest technology. Over the next 3 years, I had just one episode of weakness involving my right hand. So if I'd been in a drug trial, that would have been a huge success.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was I'd been steadily declining. And by 2003, I have weakness in my truncal muscles. I had severe fatigue. My physician told me it was time to get a tocline wheelchair and begin mitoxantrone. Now, I should also say in 2002, the year earlier, my physician had told me about the work of Lauren Cordain, the paleo diet. And so after 20 years of being a vegetarian, I went back to eating meat. I gave up all grains, all legumes, all dairy. I continued to decline, and the next year I needed the wheelchair. But I stayed with the paleo diet because I felt like at least I was doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I continued to decline. Then Tysabri was released. My physicians put me on that. I continued to decline. Then I switched to Cellcept. I continued to decline. And it was apparent to me that the newest drug were not likely to stop my decline into a bedridden, potentially demented life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began searching PubMed, at first looking for other new drug development studies. Then I had a big aha moment, like, well, I should be looking for vitamin supplement studies because those were things I find and potentially use. There wasn't much in the MS world. There was stuff in Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's, Huntington's disease. And so I began focusing on mitochondria health and would develop a vitamin supplement cocktail that did help my fatigue slightly. And so I was excited about self-experimentation, but
mm-hmm.
I continued to slowly decline. In 2007, I was so weak I could not sit up in a regular chair. It was a struggle to walk 10 feet using two walking sticks. I was beginning to have problems with a lot of brain fog and cognitive issues. But with that summer, I discovered the Institute for Functional Medicine. I took their course on neuroprotection. I had a longer list of vitamins and supplements. And then I had a really very nice aha moment that I should take my long list of supplements and use that to guide the redesign of my diet to ramp up the nutrient density around those particular nutrients. Mm-hmm. And so I restructured my paleo diet in a very specific way, focusing on mitochondria and brain cell nutrients. 3 months later, I was beginning to walk with a cane. 6 months later, I was able to walk without a cane. Still had a limp. 9 months later, I got on my bike for the first time. Mm-hmm. In about 6 years, biked around the block. I'm crying. My wife's crying. My kids are crying. So this is when I began to think, like, wow, how much recovery might be possible. And at 12 months, I'm able to do a 20-mile bike ride with my family.
Wow.
And this really changes, you know, how I'm thinking about disease and mm-hmm. health. It changes the way I practice medicine. And, you know, that would ultimately lead to where I'm at now with a very different focus on my research, a very different kind of clinical practice. Writing books for the public, lecturing physicians around the country and around the world, and creating this program to mm-hmm. get this information into as wide of a scope that I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Wall, can you tell us about your research now?
Sure. So my original field of research was in the area of diagnostic error, where people lose test results. And there's a delay in diagnosis. When I had my recovery, my chief of medicine called me in and gave me the assignment of writing up a case report with my treating medical team mm-hmm. Because it was so unusual to have progressive MS reverse. So we did that. Then he called me back and said, I want you to write up a protocol to test whether or not this is safe for other people to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the effect size is, so we could, you know, see that is this feasible in others. So we did that. I had to raise about $100,000 to get that to happen. We had remarkable success in that little safety study. Then we ran a couple more small pilot studies that were randomized and controlled. We were able to use those studies to get a much larger study funded by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, where we enter people into the study, observe them for 12 weeks, then randomize them into either following the SWANC diet, a low saturated fat diet, or the Walls diet, and then we follow them for another 12 weeks
mm-hmm.
and see the impact on their fatigue, their strength, their motor skills, their visual function, quality of life. And then we follow them for another 12 weeks to see, can they sustain these changes? The study goes on for 4 years. We have, I think we're up to 41 people that we have enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
We need to enroll a little over 100 and follow them for 36 weeks. So the study goes on for about another 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably about 3 years before we will be publishing this data. But in about 2 years, we'll begin presenting this data in multiple sclerosis international meetings.
Great. Good.
Things are going really, very well. We're very excited about it.
Right. Sounds exciting. Then, Dr. Wall, what are the key parts of your dietary plan?
Well, let's sort of contrast this with the SWANC diet. The SWANC diet, and here's the first guy to talk about diet as a big factor. He really focused on fat, the problem with why people develop heart disease, why they develop cancer, why they develop MS. And he thought saturated fat, because of the World War II data, was the culprit. And so he put people on a fat that was only 20 grams of fat, and then he further restricted it down to just 15 grams of fat. You know, people have a fair amount of sugar to make the diet perhaps a bit more palatable. 15 grams of fat means no chicken skin, only a teaspoon of saturated fat, no butter, no full fat milk, no fatty meat. So very, very, very low
mm-hmm.
saturated fat diet. My premise was that we needed to have nutrient density for the things that your brain cells need and your mitochondria need. So the diet was designed around how to maximally nourish the brain and how to induce the enzymes that are really important for detox and for brain cell health. Mm-hmm. So I ended up creating a diet that focused on more vegetables, a particular pattern of vegetables, having sufficient protein, and encouraging a better ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fat.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do this study, we had to have a pre-study that showed this diet was, in fact, nutrient-dense. Because, you know, anytime you exclude food groups, because we excluded, you know, gluten and dairy, et cetera, mm-hmm. Like most paleo diets do, that raises huge red flags in the nutrition world. Like, that diet could possibly be nutrient dense when you're excluding whole food groups. So we had to do a little pre-study and a nutrient analysis to show that the diet we had constructed was, in fact, extraordinarily nutrient dense.
Then how does the microbiome influence the brain neurotransmitters?
Well, you know, this is really very new and exciting research that just has been expanding steadily over the last 5 years. We appreciate that the bacteria in our gut digest our food, digest each other's byproducts, and make a lot of small molecules that get into our bloodstream. And these small molecules interact with how we run the chemistry in our cells. Many of these molecules can get into our, cross the blood-brain barrier and get into the brain. Now, the liver has a really big role in filtering out the small molecules that are toxic to our the way we run the biochemistry of life. So assuming you have a good, healthy liver, your liver can take out the toxic gut byproducts and let the health-promoting gut byproducts stay in our bloodstream, which will then get up to our brain, cross the blood-brain barrier, and to our increasing research and, frankly, amazement for many of us, these molecules influence mood, influence behavior, and influence the level of inflammation in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes very, very powerful which bacteria are living in your bowels, because that will determine which small molecules get made and will potentially pass over into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So more sugar leads to the wrong mix of bacteria and yeast. More vegetables lead to a more health-promoting mix of bacteria and yeast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting that we go back to fruit and vegetables, especially the now we have to have the organic as opposed to what we had when I was growing up. But when I had lung cancer, my diet was 75% raw fruit and vegetables with some additional cooked.
Yeah.
For AFib now, the doctor says that the best diet is the vegan diet. So I'm on the vegan diet. A big part of the solution seems to go back to what we're eating. And I find that,
you know,
very interesting.
I find it fascinating. You know, when I was first talking about food and its critical role, you know, I got a lot of criticism from my colleagues because I quit talking about drugs and focused on food. And I had to meet with my chief of staff, review the research. And he also became a big fan. Said, you know, look, Terry, it's science-based. If she hurts anyone, we'll do a peer review. But, you know, back off, folks. Fruits and vegetables are good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then as I was doing our research and we had, you know, such positive results, people were sort of intrigued. And now that the basic science community is beginning to figure out some mechanisms by which food can either turn genes on or off, so that's epigenetic, or food fertilize health-promoting or disease-promoting bacteria and yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the microbiome. Now, in this period of 10 years, I've gone from sort of this bizarre, we don't quite know what to think of this clinician, to what a brilliant visionary. I keep getting contacted by more of the basic scientists here who are wanting to meet with me and discuss how they could begin to study what I'm doing in their basic science labs. The speed at which this conversion has happened, I think, is really quite remarkable. You know, in just 10 years, to have had such validation with our points of view, very exciting stuff.
Right. Well, I was very impressed with the doctor I had when I had lung cancer, because this was in 1974. He was advocating a vegan diet for cancer. And he also was advocating high-dose vitamin A, which he said would prevent normal cells from converting to cancer cells. And I found the research for that about 4 years ago. So he was so far ahead of his time. But because he was so progressive and having success, unfortunately, he lost his medical license. So I think sometimes when you're very progressive and you're helping people, you have to be very careful.
You know, absolutely. And one of the people I'm really grateful for was Dr. Nisley, who, when I first began talking about these things, made a point with me and sat me down and said, had this exact conversation that people are at, if they complain about you, your license, your physical countries will get reviewed, your license will get reviewed, and you're going to be at huge risk for having your practice and your license cut off. So the university was very, very wise in guiding me on how to talk about this in my book, in my lectures, on my website, to focus on I am improving health. I'm improving the biochemistry of cells, improving the biochemistry of mitochondria. It may or may not have any impact on your disease state. And to be very, very careful to not link that I'm treating disease with these kinds of interventions.
Right.
I'm improving cellular physiology, which may, as a side effect, impact your symptoms and impact the amount of prescription medication that you need.
Right.
So I got a lot of guidance from medical legal folks to guide me on what was the appropriate way to talk about this stuff. And so it's one of the things I teach when I have my conferences, and I'm teaching clinicians how to incorporate these concepts in their clinical practice. I also give them a lot of guidance over this very specific issue, because I don't want them losing their license or being criticized in their medical community for overstating their claims.
Well, you know, I look at it from the point of view of what is this person doing that is so threatening? And an example is Dr. Forsythe. I don't know if you know Dr. Forsythe in Reno, who is a oncologist, but he also has a homeopathic degree. They have a program in Nevada where MDs can go back and take 100 hours of homeopathic content and then take the exams and then be both an MD and a homeopathic. And they went after him. And so I investigated to find out what he's doing so great that's a threat. Well, I found out that he was having, at that time, he was having 46% success, and his measure of success was 5-year survival. And his
that's very impressive.
And that was with stage 4 cancer patients. So I got him to write a chapter in my book, and he told me, he said they couldn't take my license because he had the homeopathic, but he said it cost me a lot of money to defend myself. And, you know, now he's having something like 64% success. And as you know, the traditional is like 3 to 5 for the stage 4, 5-year survival.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that the visionaries, and I'm delighted that you have the university that has been guiding you through this, because the visionaries like you and your friends with Dr. Bredesen, and I think that man is brilliant. I like what
he's doing great work.
And so, you know, I think that it's great that you have the university guiding you through this process, and now you're helping others to go through this process.
Yeah, you know, and what Bredesen and I both share is that, so we've used science to create his process. I use science to create mine. And then we're using science to test what we're doing and to continue to refine it, write grants, write papers. Because if we're going to change the standard of clinical care, we need to publish peer-reviewed literature and take the the rigors of that process, incredible challenges. So we need clinicians out there doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. We also need mm-hmm. researchers out there mm-hmm. testing the stuff, writing these grants, and mm-hmm. Flagging things through in our research labs as well.
Then back to the microbiomes, Terry. How does the microbiome influence the risk of multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune diseases?
So we're continuing to really deepen the understanding about this. One of the current theories is that depending on which microbes, you know, yeast, bacteria, single cell parasites you have in your gut, these organisms can open the little gate that determine how leaky the gut mm-hmm. and blood barrier is. And if the gates are open a little too big, food particles and bacteria fragments can get from within your gut into your bloodstream. Where your immune cells will react to this, being very concerned that microbes get into your bloodstream. And so your immune cells will react very vigorously against these threats. Mm-hmm. So we think step number one is developing a leaky gut that lets these protein fragments get into the bloodstream, either food proteins aren't fully digested or bacterial fragments. So step one, leaky gut. Step two, this vigorous immune reaction. Step three is the immune reaction beginning to also react not just to the protein food fragments, the microbe food fragments, but to begin to get confused and think these fragments look too similar to various cellular structures in your body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So some of our medications will make for that leaky gut. Things like acid-lowering medications can do that. Aspirin can do that. Non-steroidal inflammatory drugs can do that. Things like ibuprofen and Advil.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're having a little more awareness that an antibiotic and high sugar can kill off bacteria, shift in the gluten, fertilize the harmful yeast like Candida. Mm-hmm. too much.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the byproducts in the biochemistry that Candida yeast do open these gates. So there are a lot of ways these gates can get opened. The microbes in the yeast and the bacterial fragments mm-hmm. can open those things directly.
Mm-hmm. Is inflammation a big part of this process?
So our bodies maintain our cells through inflammation, where immune cells come in,
mm-hmm.
Dissolve the broken down stuff and rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
So inflammation is an absolutely necessary part of maintaining a healthy body. When the damage to a healthy body is occurring because of an infecting organism, that inflammation is a vital part of protecting us from that damaging infection.
Oh.
Or if that the change in our body is because of a cancerous cell, that inflammation is a vital part of protecting us.
Mm-hmm.
We're beginning to realize that sometimes there's a change cell that has nothing to do with infection, nothing to do with cancer, but has to do sometimes with our immune cells not being able to tell that that cell mm-hmm. is a normal structure.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks too similar to either a food fragment or a bacterial infection mm-hmm. that immune cells got sensitized to because of that leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
And so our immune cells are attacking what should be healthy structures. They've gotten confused by that first step that we talked about earlier, that leaky gut
mm-hmm.
and the long proteins getting into our bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so this inflammation, which is a normal part of maintenance and repair, has now become destructive because it's going after healthy structures.
Then, Terry, how does your protocol influence the microbiome?
Well, I'm very, very excited. We have a basic science partner who's now part of my study team. And so we're going to be measuring this very, very precisely, and we're going to be able to talk about that in future papers. What we are doing that is so, so exciting is knowing which microbes they're doing, what are their metabolic effects. The theory which I think is a very rational one, is that by taking away the sugar and a lot of these grain foods that in the genetically susceptible person open up those gates, we take those foods out that can help those gates and the leaky gut get closed again. And then by having all of these vegetables, because I have a very, very vegetable-rich diet, we're fertilizing the health-promoting microbes, which shift the chemistry in a favorable way, shift which genes on or off in a favorable way. And these are some of the effects that we're collecting that basic science information. So, you know, again, when my study's done in another couple of years, we'll be able to begin analyzing this stuff and really going after what we've got.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. What are three things then the listeners could do right now that would make a difference in their lives?
Well, the first one is to get the sugar out of the diet and the what we call high glycemic index foods. So a lot of flour-based products, they get converted into sugars much too quickly into our gut.
Mm-hmm.
So that's step number one. Take out the sugar and flour-based products. You know, number two, many people have unrecognized gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
So I take out the gluten-containing grains. And number three, ramp up those vegetables. Cabbage, you know, a lot of green leafy vegetables, cabbage family, onion family vegetables, and deeply pigmented things like beets, carrots, berries.
And Terry, what other illnesses could this help?
We have research evidence showing that it helps relapsed remitting MS, primary progressive MS, secondary progressive MS. In my lifestyle clinics that I ran for the VA, I saw it very helpful for diabetes, obesity, heart failure, heart disease, rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, systemic lupus, Parkinson's, cognitive decline. In my community of hundreds of thousands of followers, we see it to be very helpful in psoriasis, eczema, scleroderma, mixed connective tissue disease, anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder. And also say early and moderate Alzheimer's.
Then how does your protocol treat pain, reduce inflammation, repair neurons, and boost the nerve growth factors?
You know, the diet is designed very specifically to be sure that the brain cells have what it needs. We also designed it around some basic science research that shows diet high in mushrooms can stimulate nerve growth factor production. The whole protocol includes some strength training, stress reduction, cognitive training, which again, in basic science studies and human studies, are shown to improve the production of nerve growth factors. So, and then we have some guidance on how to select which supplements are most likely to be very helpful, again, in stimulating production of nerve growth factors and making sure your cells have what they need to repair the myelin, which is that insulation on the wiring between brain cells.
Have you looked at all at CBD oil in this process?
I'll be talking a lot about CBD oil, the research on cannabis, in that seminar that I will have this summer. And so I think there's very interesting research on cannabis. It has been helpful in some studies for pain and spasticity and leaky bladder. Some other studies have shown that it's not been as helpful. So there's mixed results there. There are, and about probably a few more studies for pain reduction than negative studies. There are some studies on the psychoactive components in the basic science showing benefits for pain reduction. Cannabidiol, which is a element of cannabis that is not psychoactive. There's not a lot of research data out there. I think I'm going to be watching that closely. There are certainly many reports of cannabidiol being quite helpful in terms of reducing the risk of seizures. I know the pediatric community that has refractory seizure disorders has been using cannabidiol in their reporting success in those populations.
Mm-hmm. Great. It sounds like a good possibility then.
I'm very excited. We'll be watching this to see what gets reported out in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Dr. Wall, what is the single most powerful intervention to lower all cause of mortality and morbidity?
I'll be talking about this again at the ISM conference. There's this lovely meta-analysis that combined 16 studies looking at all-cause mortality, cancer mortality, heart disease, and I believe diabetes was in that mix, covering 880,000 lives. And these were dietary assessment studies.
Mm-hmm.
And the leading thing was the amount of fruits and vegetables that you eat. And there's a steady dose-dependent relationship. That's why it came with that we want adults to have 9 cups measured raw of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a very, very powerful intervention for all cause health issues.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy, but people just want something that is easy, like buying the processed foods and the standard American diet. And it's hard to understand once you move to a vegan diet. You know, it doesn't really take that long to prepare the food at home. The problem is eating out. It's not always as easy to find. And I'm also gluten sensitive, so, you know, I have that on top of
that. So we're very similar, yeah. it has gotten easier. Definitely has gotten easier over the 10 years I've been doing this. I'll talk with people, my wait staff, and explain, you know, I have a reaction to gluten, dairy, and eggs that would put me in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know what's safe to eat. And typically what they'll come up with is grilled vegetables and a grilled protein source. I prefer not to have any sauce. It's like olive oil on the side that I put over everything. And that has worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a while to get comfortable telling my wait staff that I have a serious reaction. Just please guide me on what's safe to eat in your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's worked really quite well for me.
And how do you implement the WALS protocol when money is limited?
The number one thing we need to do, the people that I saw and took care of for years when I was in the VA were on food stamps, often disabled, not working. Money's very tight. So we taught them how to cook at home, how to find these ingredients. They would grow them, use community gardens, go to farmers market. A trick that my patients taught me was you walk around the with the growers and ask them, what's the best price you could give me at the very end of the farmers market?
Mm-hmm.
And so people often found they could buy their vegetables pennies on a dollar.
Oh, really?
Yes, they picked them up at the very end of the farmer's market. Because people didn't want to carry stuff back home. So they were often ready to give substantial amounts of produce to the enterprising folks who were willing to pick up the load at the very end of the farmer's market.
That's great. I wouldn't have thought of that, but it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do you get your family on board with these changes?
We have to talk all the time. And the other thing that I explain is you can control what you bring in your house. You control what you're going to buy. When your children leave your home, it's going to be much more difficult. But you can first purge your house of the food that's harmful to you. Fill up the house with foods that are good. Talk about them, why you're eating this way, and engage the children in helping prepare the meal, create the menu, ideally helping you in the garden, helping with meal cleanup, and you'll find more acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's very, very helpful to get the parents and the grandparents all in agreement with what plan is.
Mm-hmm. And do you have update on your research programs now that you can share?
You know, I have people do is go to my website, treywalls.com. We have links where people can learn more about our research program and links where people can know how to get screened for the studies that we're doing, sign up for our newsletter so they can hear more about where I'm going and what's going on in the research world.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Terry, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your books and any services that you offer and how listeners reach you?
Well, you know, I want people to know that the choices that we make, the diet, the foods that we choose to eat, the stress-reducing practices that we have, our exercise, patterns. The science is increasingly clear that these are incredibly powerful at turning disease-promoting genes on and off,
mm-hmm.
fertilizing health-promoting bacteria or disease-promoting bacteria, rebalancing our hormonal signals, creating more favorable cell chemistry or unfavorable cell chemistry. So we are incredibly powerful at improving health. And I just want people to understand that if I can get my life back when I could not sit up, so I can now bike 20 miles, mm-hmm. spend the day biking with my family, there's a huge possibility that they could get their lives back.
Right.
And following my program for 100 days, meticulously, carefully, is a very simple test that they could take.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out, could they get benefit or not?
It's interesting because the statistics for cancer prevention has exercise at 50% and nutrition at 35%. I was shocked when I saw those statistics because I would have thought that nutrition would have been more important than exercise.
You know, I would absolutely think so, too. I would love to see those source documents and, critically, I would have my doubts.
Yeah. Then can you tell us about your book and if you have services, your website, et cetera?
So I have two books that are available right now. The Walls Protocol, which is both in hardback and paperback, that describe my experience and what the protocol looks like in terms of diet, lifestyle, how I think about supplements. Very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next book, The Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life, which is a cookbook which takes people through all three different levels of my diet. And I actually focus on how to make this affordable for those who don't have money, how to make it affordable for those who are limited on time, and how to make it more acceptable to the whole family. So it's a very, very helpful resource. And then on my website, terrywalls.com, and that's T-E-R-R-Y, Walls, W-A-H-L-S.com, we have links to you can sign up to get the newsletter, which is incredibly helpful with a lot of information about like papers, research, where I'm going, what's going on. We have links to some products to help people implement the program if they feel like they would need more support. So we have menu programs. We have membership programs, which access to more lectures, question and answer sessions. And then I have a seminar that targets both public and treating clinicians to teach people how to use diet and lifestyle mm-hmm. to create more health and reduce symptoms from a variety of chronic health challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And then most recently, we've added a concierge practice for people who really want an intensive personal evaluation and recommendations on how to create the most optimal environment for their repair. And information about all of that can be found on my website. And for those who just would like to follow me in my social media world, there is Facebook at Terry Walls MD, Twitter at Terry Walls, and Instagram at Dr. Terry Walls, so Dr. Terry Walls. One last thing to mention, we are having a series of webinars with interviews on health and wellness experts. I'm going to have Dr. Ken Sharlin, January 22nd, who's a functional neurologist, and we'll be talking about what a functionally trained neurologist can do for you and how that approach might be very, very different than what your conventional neurology approach would be to managing Parkinson's, MS, ALS, fibromyalgia, dementia.
That's great. And if you would give us the website again.
Sure. Terry Wall, that's TerryWals, as in stop.
Great. I appreciate this so much, Terry. It's been very interesting, and I enjoy talking with very intelligent people like you and Dr. Bredesen, who are on the cutting edge of cures. I shouldn't say cures, but they are. You're the example of overcoming multiple sclerosis. So I think that is fantastic. And I know the listeners will get very excited about this. And I hope that you will continue with your work. I look forward to talking with you again one day.
Great.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you so very, very much for the opportunity to speak with your audience.
Great. And you have a great day.
All right. Thank you much now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Because we have some time left today, I would like to talk with you about my new Cancer Foundation and an opportunity that I think will be of interest to you. My new Cancer Foundation can be found at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. On the site, you will see first a video of the foundation. You will also see the goals, which are education, research, and patient care. I have an impressive board and advisory board for this foundation, and you can look at these on the site. I have worked for over a year getting content on the site, including interviews with cancer patients and doctors, cancer research, cancer treatment, and what is different on my site is research on mental, spiritual interventions and interviews with experts for interviews like affirmations, visualization, prayer, meditation, gratitude, forgiveness, and many others. These are included because I believe that disease results from multiple factors and consequently a holistic approach is necessary for recovering from cancer. To me, prayer, faith, optimism, and others are as important in treatment as medication, supplements, diet, and other interventions. I have experience to support this belief. Having used a holistic approach since 1970, when I volunteered as a camp nurse for the Edgar Cayce organization, it was natural to use this approach when I was diagnosed with lung cancer in 1974. Curing this disease with all natural, holistic interventions, I continued using the approach in my personal life and with clients, and am now considered a pioneer in holistic health. I worked for about a year developing content on preventing cancer for my Cancer Foundation website. This content of over 150 pages has been published as a book titled Reducing Your Cancer Risk, A Holistic Approach, available on my website or at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and other sites for $14.95 to benefit the foundation. It will include the following. First, as a longtime educator, I like to start my writing with a theoretical framework in which to place the content. So there is first a theoretical framework based upon public health concepts. This framework will basically look at, first, ways to reduce the risk of known environmental carcinogens, and second, ways to strengthen the host against environmental and other carcinogens. Content on reducing the effect of known environmental carcinogens include electromagnetic waves, toxic chemicals such as BPA, formaldehyde, toxic metals such as aluminum and mercury, and last ultraviolet waves. For all areas, there will be research related to the carcinogen, what you can do to reduce the risk, and an interview with an expert for many of these. The second part looks at ways to strengthen the host or you against carcinogens. It includes areas such as physical activities, nutrition including genetically modified organisms, organic food, etc., fluids, water and milk, supplements, vitamins, minerals, immune builders, sleep, smoking cessation, music, and then it moves into mental, spiritual interventions that includes affirmations, compassion, faith, forgiveness, gratitude, meditation, optimism, prayer, relaxation exercises, serving or helping others, social support, stress reduction, and visualization. Again, for each of these, there is research, what to do to strengthen yourself against cancer, and interviews with experts for many of these. You will hear interviews with 30 cancer or related experts on mental, spiritual interventions, such as forgiveness, gratitude, faith, and compassion. You'll hear about omega-3s, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified food, plant-based and other nutritional diets, smoking cessation, chemical and mental carcinogens, immune builders, music, and much, much more. So I hope this will be helpful to you and will help in preventing cancer in the future. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/Beat Lung Cancer Natural Alternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.